Chapter 15, Cal Berkeley.
So how did you end up teaching at Cal in Berkeley?
When it became apparent that I was leaving KNBC, it became apparent when I was fired. And I started searching around for things. I had been teaching some for Stanford, for the Stanford Broadcast Institute that was held in the studios at KNBC. And I kind of liked teaching. In the line of television and radio, there weren't a lot of people who were available to teach who had the academic credentials. A lot of the guys had BAs, but very rarely did people have an MA and in journalism, which made me a little special, only because of the classes and the degrees I had. The dean of the journalism department was Charlie Halton. I had known Charlie. We had been at events and occasions where we would talk. He was the dean of the journalism department at Cal, and I was a reporter. We were friendly enough. We knew one another more than just in passing. And I got in touch with him, and he said, "I just might have a spot for you. One of my assistants is leaving. He's, let me think about this. I'll get back to you." He got back to me very fast. I was offered a job as a lecturer. And I was given three quarters time. It was almost a full-time job, teaching three different classes. All journalism, one on interviewing, one on journalism, one on one basic introduction to journalism, and then another one on television and radio reporting. That went pretty well, and that went on for years, and I ended up augmenting my income by becoming a weekend television reporter at Channel 7, the ABC station, and all was well until two things happened. I got the Fulbright Professorship Award and spent a year in Ankara and came back to a journalism department where Halton had died in the interim and a new dean was there. I just wasn't his real cup of tea. We got along okay, but I was nothing special for him. And he had a friend in New York out of PBS television, Andy Stern, who he wanted to bring out here. It led to my being lopped off, and it was during this period that I was a weekend reporter at KGO. Ira Blue had me substituting for his nightly talk show, three-hour talk show. I was doing that, and the writers went on strike, and I wouldn't go through the picket line, and I lost my contact with ABC and Channel 7 and KGO Radio, all in one swell swoop. And it was okay because Roland Post, who is an executive in AFTRA at the time and very much the staunch union man, appreciated my standing on the picket line as just about the only employee of Channel 7 who was willing to stick his neck out. Roland got me into KPIX as a weekend substitute reporter.
What was the Berkeley campus like at that time?
The Berkeley campus in the 60s was an exciting place, if you like that kind of excitement. The Vietnam War had triggered protests on a daily basis. Jerry Rubin was out there burning his draft card. It just was a hotbed of protest and constant confrontation with the authorities, with the Berkeley Police Department, with the campus police department. It was a revolving door to the Berkeley jail cell. And this was big, big news that kept going on and on and on. And Reagan, as governor, decided enough's enough. He put the National Guard on campus, and things kept getting hotter and hotter. And finally, in a huge demonstration in Sproul Plaza, he had a helicopter come in and drop tear gas in the center of Sproul Plaza to disperse the crowd. I was on the third floor of Sproul Plaza in my office, which looked down directly on the steps in the plaza, and watched this whole scene. I could barely smell tear gas in the window, nothing that affected me, but I knew what was going on. I went into the dean's office and said, I resign. I want no part of this campus anymore. And fortunately, the dean patted me on the shoulder and said, Ed, this will all straighten out. I will not accept your resignation. So I got off on that one pretty good. But it was a terrible scene there, just nonstop. And it was violent.
And this is all at the same time as People's Park? Was that
People's Park followed the free speech movement.
So it just went on and on and on.
It went on from one thing to another.
Wow. I was wondering if you could talk about who some of your students were. I remember you throwing a wonderful party at the end of one of the quarters when we were living at Greenwich Street, and I got to meet some of them, and I was just amazed at how they just totally adored you. They were some pretty nice people and very talented, I think.
If I had to pick out the most interesting and educational, delightful in an academic way period of my life, it would be the 5 years I was teaching at that level. The students were wonderful. These were bright kids, eager to participate. I didn't have any real rabble rouses of what was going on at the university at the time in any of my classes. So I was never faced with any confrontations of any kind. I got along really well. My guess is I was pretty straight and natural. I wasn't a stuffed shirt. Kids could ask me anything they wanted to, and I would try to answer them if I could. I told them about the reality of the news business as well as the formality of the news business. It just was fun. I made dear friends with a number of them. One of them went on to become ABC's bureau chief in the Far East from Tokyo. Others became pretty good stars in their own right locally for newspapers as well as television. I had generally a pretty good gang. I enjoyed them and they enjoyed me, and I really was anxious to go to class virtually every day. Some days were not so hot, but that's another story. But almost all the time, I look forward to getting into the classroom.
Haight-Ashbury, when we were living there, it was like 1965. Some pretty interesting times.
Our arrival in the Haight was exactly 6 months before the Summer of Love, before the Haight-Ashbury became an internationally known name. The Flower Children followed us by 6 months and became a wonderfully interesting neighborhood. Concerts in the Panhandle by some of the groups that went on to truly worldwide fame. There was the Grateful Dead just lived down the street. They were on Ashbury Street, and Stephanie used to go over there because she made friends with some. It wasn't a big thing that she was a groupie or anything like that. These were just interesting people who played music, they had their pad just a half block away from us on Ashbury Street. Stephanie, I remember, just was enamored with a gift she got after helping clean their house. It was a pair of jeans shorts from Pig Pen.
Yeah, I remember.
The rest of the scene there was, the beginning was fun, the middle was not so much fun, and the end of Haight-Ashbury is the resurrection, I suppose. Things were really exciting in the early stages of this invasion of rebellious youth that unfortunately dissolved into a pretty serious drug scene and the consequences of free love. It got nasty. One of the closest calls I ever had in my life was covering a demonstration. This is well on into the 60s, late 60s. There was a demonstration going on Haight Street. The rebels were up on the roofs. Police were trying to break things up, and the rebels up on the roofs were throwing bricks and rocks and whatever else they can throw. And a brick just narrowly missed my head that had been thrown with force from the roof. It couldn't have missed me by more than an inch. That's how close. The scene got nasty and finally ran its course. The Haight is now considered a reasonably interesting neighborhood again.
Tell me about the Fulbright Scholarship.
While I was teaching at Cal, I applied for a Fulbright Scholarship. You know, there was one in Spain that looked attractive to me. I believe it was in Madrid. But after a period of months, the State Department came to me, or the Fulbright Commission, it later became State Department business, and said no on Spain, that that position had been filled. However, would I consider a Fulbright at Ankara, Turkey? I went to the maps to find out where Ankara, Turkey was. And it was a year in a foreign country, paid, teaching what I loved to do. Why not? And that's how we went to Ankara, Turkey. There was one other interesting thing that happened in this period. I had pretty well decided that I was walking on thin ice in a lot of ways, freelancing and trying to put things together. I really wanted to go back to South America. And John Chancellor and I were good friends. We both went on the air at NBC at the same time, David Brinkley being the third one that was chosen as a writer to become the one who voiced his own material. Chancellor had become big time. He inherited the Huntley Brinkley Evening News. He was a very desirable person, and Lyndon Johnson, the president, decided Chancellor was the man he wanted to run the Voice of America. Chancellor became the head of the Voice of America. It's very hard to say no to Lyndon Johnson. And he was out in Berkeley for something, and we had lunch together. I said, you know, I'd really like to join The Voice, and if South America were available, I'd love it. And he said, let me look into it. Within a week or so, he had the ball rolling for me to become the VOA correspondent in Rio. And we then entered into a long vetting process. This went on for months, filling out various things and going into my background. And it was finally to be decided with three State Department, I won't call them interrogators, but interviewers, who sat us down for a couple of hours. Sat us down because Joanna had to be in on this as well. They wanted to talk to both of us. And Joanna found it very hard to hide her terrible dislike of the Vietnam War and the policies that led to it. The whole scene that Vietnam had caused at that time, the draft and everything else, she had a hard time convincing that group of three guys that she supported the administration in Vietnam. And that was the end of that. Chancellor wrote to me sometime later, shortly thereafter, saying it's a no-go. Vietnam is a stumbling block.
Wow. Did you have to go through the same kind of vetting when you got the Fulbright? Did they do that?
There was no vetting when I got the Fulbright.
Was that part of the State Department too?
The State Department ran the Fulbright. I was the person hired by the State Department. The funds for the Fulbright went through the State Department.
So it's government, so they didn't delve in. That wasn't as, it didn't pose the same kind of stumbling block.
Academics, you don't vet.
Oh.
In those days, you didn't anyhow.
Who was Pete Jones?
While I was teaching at Cal, thanks to my buddies at ABC by this time, I had an opportunity to go to New York to work a summer in the ABC newsroom in New York as a writer-producer. I spent the summer in New York. I told the university for contacts for the students. I wrote a lot of news on the hours. I did all of the duties of a lackey writer-producer in the newsroom at ABC. I thought, you know, there must be a way I can increase my income. I had a few drinks with some of my old buddies from Monitor. Monitor was still on the air, even though I was no longer with NBC. And I said, I told Buck Prince, who was producer in charge of Monitor, I see a number of things with outside eyes in New York that would be interesting for the nation. Buck said, why don't you do them? Just do them under another name. I developed another name, something like Pete Jones, and did, I guess, somewhere around 8 or 10 pieces for Monitor that summer in New York, and got paid privately by check to the San Francisco residents.
This concludes Chapter 15.